Hello, thank you for joining us for what should be a great game.
Fourth official couldn't allow him on because the fourth official never had cheap.
Well, he never heated up the baby, did he? Unless he's breastfeeding, he should be alright.
Hello and welcome to the Football Family, the 42 is dedicated football podcast. Coming to you on Tuesday once again as we recap last night's action in the League of Ireland, the three-way title race that is emerging in England's Premier League, and the small matter of an Ireland manager being confirmed. Gavin Cooney and Shane Keegan, how are we?
What's the crack? All good?
Not too bad. Not too bad.
I tried to sound as jubilant and as buoyant as possible there. But as I just said to you, Gav and Shane, before we came on, that if we're kind of this worn down by the whole managerial search for the FA, before a football has even been kicked in international football this year, that doesn't bode well.
No, it's gone on a bit too long now for my tastes, I have to say. Maybe it's like a joke where, you know, you initially repeat it and it's funny, and then you repeat it so often it stops becoming funny. But if you keep on repeating it again, it eventually becomes funny again. So maybe if this drags out for another 100 days, it might become interesting again. But
that is how I tell all my jokes and friends.
At least I'm able to just watch this from a distance. Like I assume, like, you two essentially have to spend a portion of every single one of these days trying to find out, is there any more loose?
I'll let you peek behind the curtain here, Shane, and my wife won't be appreciative of this. So Saturday night, my young lad was sick. Poor fella has a throat and ear infection. So he's in bed with us. We go to bed early because we're like, you know what, let him sleep in with us and just let him get comfortable. And then I get a notification on my phone that Slaven Bilic is the new front runner to be the Ireland manager. I can't remember what time it was late enough. And then on WhatsApp for the next 45 minutes with my son snoring beside me, trying to confirm whether or not this is true. I go downstairs and Chantal, my wife, wakes up. She was like, I thought you were staying in bed. What's going on? I'll just have something to do, work or whatever. And then she even said, is it the new Ireland manager? So that gave me an indication of how I spent my weekend.
and every other weekend.
We're making assumptions, but obviously it is John O'Shea who is the interim manager, Gav.
Yeah, so I like the interim thing. I've come around to it. I did the press conference yesterday with John O'Shea and Mark Canham. Everyone was in good form. John O'Shea was in great form. He was cracking jokes. He just seemed pretty delighted to have the opportunity. There was a freshness to everything. You know, all the journalists were in a pretty good mood. So I'm thinking, let's just do this all the time. Let's just appoint an interim boss for every international window we've got coming up. Rotate it. You know, get a new guy in there every time. I love that sense of freshness. And that's all that's all fans really want, you know? I mean, we've talked about it before, but the candidates people seem to hate are your Neil Lennons, your Chris Coleman's, your Steve Bruce's, these guys who they know so much about. Like, the country is hungry for Anthony Barry, who's never been a manager before. So that sense of freshness, I think the FAI could really get onto something by just not having a permanent head coach at all, you know, and just having an interim.
What you're saying is take the Watford approach. Yeah. Which would kind of tally with Slaven Bilic, because he obviously was a Watford manager for about 7 minutes.
Yeah, so no, it was great. So what do we know? I mean, so Mark Cannon was there with John O'Shea yesterday. He read a prepared statement, and he said that basically it does appear that the FAI have their man now. You know, this is all the more galling for myself and David Chain, is because there seems to be an appointed candidate, just nobody knows who it is yet outside of Mark Cannon and Jonathan Hill. So that candidate is going to be unveiled in early April. They can't be unveiled because of their existing contractual obligations, as they say. So that would mean that John O'Shea is not in the running for the permanent gig, which obviously took a lot of the heat out of yesterday's presser, because the natural question to ask O'Shea is, do you see this as an Eileen Gleeson-style audition for the main gig? But that doesn't seem to be the case. He may stick around on the coaching staff. I think if I was a betting man, I'd say he probably will, whoever does come in, but that's not guaranteed. That's all subject to our old friend, the collaborative approach with whoever the new candidate is. So is it going to be Lee Carsey? I mean, this is the big question now. I mean,
Well, I came on here on the uneducated assumption that it absolutely now was Lee Carsley, because, I don't know, some few of the clever journalists were putting timelines together around international windows and couldn't be Premier League because they'd be... And I just assumed that we, you know, we're either formally or informally going to talk about the fact that it was Lee Carsley. But again, before we even get on air, you're hitting me with more tweets that I've managed to not come across that apparently is telling us
that it's not Lee Carsley. Like, just to add to it, but even we'll go back a week, right, just to give you an insight into this. And it's very easy to say it, but like me and Gav were kind of going back and forth on WhatsApp and all the rest of it last week, because we kind of gotten wind that something was happening, something was materialising, whereby stuff was falling in place behind the scenes in the FAI. And we were just trying to determine, well, hold on, is it actually just an interim boss that they're bringing in last week, or going to just be the interim? Kind of, and then obviously putting questions through, and then obviously the statement comes out, what was it, Gav, about an hour or so later, to say that it's John O'Shea, and which kind of would tally, because obviously it was O'Shea who made sure he got, say for me, Paddy McCarthy in as his assistant. That was boxed off because it was the last Saturday week was when Cannon came to O'Shea and said, yeah, listen, we want you to be the interim manager. They have discussions about it. It was made clear to him, from my understanding, that it was going to just be the gig for these two games. So we went into it knowing that. But then has obviously made sure he's playing as strong a hand as possible here to make sure he's getting a good setup for himself, that it's not, he's just going in and it's, does like what Gab was saying there about it, there's a freshness, but it also feels as if it's not just going to be a bit of a wasted window or a window of nothing happening. Like, there's going to be serious people in there with a decent pedigree. Brian Kerr has come back. Like, you were there yesterday, Gab. That seems to be that was maybe Canham's suggestion to O'Shea. But the fact that some of these names weren't announced when the decision was made, or when the O'Shea's decision was made, would kind of hint that maybe stuff was still happening in the background before these people were coming on board, like Glenn Whelan, for example, as well.
Yeah, for sure. Like, we kind of pretty much admitted yesterday that when they didn't have someone in place by February the 8th, the Nations League campaign, at that point they were like, yeah, look, this, we're probably going to have to go an interim candidate here for the March window. And obviously they've alighted on O'Shea. They obviously, during that process, seem to have actually appointed the guy and just aren't telling us because of the contractual stuff. So, I mean, is it, but like, you know, some of the time, you know, you listen to what Mark Canham said yesterday and the gaps in the speech and what was hinted to, and you think, yeah, Lee Carsley actually fits in there because, you know, he obviously doesn't want to walk away from the English FA on the eve of two qualifiers for his under-21 side. Then can go in April. They don't play again until September, so maybe it's a good time all in. But then there are other things that makes me kind of put the handbrake on, saying, yeah, Carsley's definitely back in the frame. First of all, still, I mean, we're months in, no one has a fucking clue whether he wants the job or not, you know? I mean, Thomas Gravesen has made tens of millions of dollars playing cards in Las Vegas, but he's probably had the weaker poker face of the bald men in Everton's midfield in the mid-2000s, because Carsley hasn't let a thing on, you know? He'll have to do press with England under-21s later this month, so
but
maybe
this
we'll
thing,
get an
he
insight
may,
there.
Sorry on that gap, but we made that point, and because this is something that I was trying to chase up, like, I don't think he's going to be doing that until maybe the end of the month, because England playing Azerbaijan, and just from chatting to people in the English FA, they're kind of having like a slim down window, they were saying, because they're going to be travelling over a lot earlier to actually get to Azerbaijan early, so that the squad is only going to be announced for England. It's 21s. Like, you look at this, we're literally fucking arsed about England's 21s. You know what I mean? But like, they're only going to be announcing, they're going to be announcing that in 10 days, but it's only going to be online, so there's not going to be a presser for it, it seems.
Oh,
doesn't
God.
Seem to be the case. So, and you're right, like, this is the thing, is like, you, let's be honest, like, everyone knows how it works. You would normally get a steer from people within close to a camp, or even from the person themselves, saying, yeah, this is what I think could happen, this could be happening, this is happening. That's not happening with Carsley, or even people with him. It's just not. And that's part of the reason why we don't know where this thinking was at, in the sense that you read between the lines. I know, I think it was 2 weeks ago we said, maybe he's just realised he's onto a much better gig at England, but we still can't say for certain that it is, and that's just the truth of it.
Yeah, and also, sorry David, the other thing that would kind of makes me cautious on Carsley is that, you know, his contractual status with the FA hasn't changed since this whole thing began. Like, okay, on the 1st of March, it looks like, well, if he is going to leave, I'm going to wait till early April after these matches. But, like, the FA reshuffled their entire coaching structure of underage teams at the start of the year. Like, if he was going to leave, that would have been the time to leave. Like, that would have been a lot easier. And then, so what could have changed in between then and now for Carsley, hypothetically? The only thing that could have changed is money, that the FAI have managed to stump up more cash to get him and his preferred backroom team across the line. But the FAI have openly told us that money's not been an issue anywhere, you know, and there's also doubts as to, you know, you talk to people about Carsley, like these people wouldn't be necessarily close to him, but they would have an insight into him and say he's not actually massively motivated by the money. It's more kind of the picture, the project and the big picture thing. And, you know, if that has fallen down for Carsley, I don't know how that could have been resurrected in the last few. The only thing that has changed is Caoimhín Kelleher. Like, that's the only thing that's changed is he's playing regularly now. And we've already got a good keeper in Bazunu anyway. So, look, it's entirely possible that the money's got better and money solves a lot of problems and that Carsley has agreed to take it. But I just think, given all we know, I'd be very cautious about saying he's absolutely back in the frame.
Is there a... Go on, sorry, Shane, go on.
And can I ask the question... Can I ask the question? So, based on Canham's comments, like, are we led to believe here that a new manager has signed a contract to become the new Ireland manager? Or is, like, please don't tell me we have a scenario here where Ireland believe, Canham spoke as a man who believed they had a deal done with somebody, i.e. possibly Carsley, but could yet still be left with egg in their face that Carsley backs away again when you have an FA offer.
So I asked that question, Shane, and he didn't say anything. He, you know, respect the confidentiality of the process, okay, et cetera, et cetera. If there's one phrase I never want to hear again, it's need to respect the confidentiality of the process.
I never fucking realised so many people have so much fucking respect for this process. People who should know better than should be telling us what's going on.
So
I never realised even people who have no idea, who have no involvement with the FAI or around the other side of things, they have so much respect for the process. This process is travelling. The story broke last Wednesday, yeah. So it would have been Tuesday night, Wednesday morning, when, again, similar, and when me and Gav were kind of sussing it out and we were realising that something was stirring and that people in there with the FAI were told something's going to be confirmed by Friday. That's why I'm listening. It could be bigging ourselves up here and could be not the reason, but like people were seeing their suggestion that something would be confirmed by Friday, which would tally with the fact that maybe not all the coaching staff, and I know there was issues with Brian Kerr was away on holiday, so maybe he was contacted late. Not the whole ticket wasn't confirmed on the actual day of the announcement. On the Wednesday it was like it was later on. But it does, in fairness, and you know what, like, I know we're joking, but I am still caught. You can't say for certain that this is all part of the master plan, because it's not. If the master plan was coming together here and was working, the permanent manager would already be in place by now. Do you know what I mean? But I do think the situation they've found themselves in, and with John O'Shea, and obviously with, say, Brian Kerr in there now, Glenn Whelan, Paddy McCarthy, you're covering an awful lot of bases there and have an awful lot of experience as well as just a freshness, as Gav pointed out. It does seem to be the very best of a situation that nobody really wanted to end up at this point. But what we have ended up with is pretty palatable, I would say.
And, like, there's so much going on here that you don't even know where to start, in that, like, Brian Kerr coming back into the fold nearly should be a podcast in its own. Like, we could talk nearly for a full podcast around, you know, what a turn of events that is and the pros and cons for that. But that's almost like a very, very much down the headline list because there's so much going on around it. I think it's brilliant that Brian is back in. I think it's absolutely brilliant that Brian is back in.
Yeah, it's interesting on Brian being back, because I had assumed wrongly that it was O'Shea's call, but it was intimated yesterday that it was actually Mark Canham who suggested the name to John, and John was just like, yeah, really good idea, you know? And, like, Mark Canham then was talking about how he has been talking, or has at least spoken with Kerr twice or three times in the last 18 months or so, which, and I know Dan McDonald made this point in his copy today in the Indo, but I do wonder what Stephen Kenny thinks of that, given Brian was a very stringent critic of his, to the point where at one point in his reign, Kenny's press officer actually sent in a complaint to Virgin Media about the tone and content of some of Kerr's criticism of the team. I also, it was asked about Shea yesterday, actually, that, you know, Brian has also criticised these players very heavily on Virgin Media very recently. How might that sit? But O'Shea was just like, he batted it away quite impressively. It was just, that's an analyst's job. And look, I've been in enough dressing rooms at halftime and after games to know that something has gone wrong. And generally, what is discussed in the dressing room is preempting what is said on television. Even by a couple of minutes, like the tones are similar there. So yeah, that's all pretty interesting. Just very briefly, a couple of other little nuggets that we got from Mark Canham yesterday around this search is that it's expected that the boss will be unveiled in early April, but will be at work straight away. It won't be a case of unveiled in April and then back in, you know, will be ready to take the games by June or something. And they won't be double jobbing either. So the example was raised of, you know, Michael O'Neill double jobbed for a while with Stoke City and Northern Ireland. Won't be a similar situation here. So again, we can go to the process of ruling people out. Like, I mean, you can pretty much rule out anyone who's currently out of a job. Like, why wouldn't they be announced now? So Neil Lennon, Chris Coleman, Paul Clement, I think they're all out now. You can also, I think you can rule out Anthony Barry, to be brutally honest with you, because he'll be with Bayern until the end of the season, probably, unless they get knocked out by Lazio tonight. But he'll definitely be at the Euros with Portugal, and that'll be until July, you know. So like, the FEI will have their guy from April. So Carsley lines up with the timelines theoretically, but there's just a couple of other things that make me kind of want to just be a bit cautious with that.
Gav, you're a lot better at ruling guys out than you are at ruling guys in. So who else give me one other name. Has anybody got another name that fits the timelines and the information that we have at the moment?
See, well, we have one, Shane, but I'm currently working on it, and I don't want to indulge you. So, and it's probably bollocks as well, so I don't want things to look like a bigger league before.
I will wait with intrigue.
I do think that is probably more likely that they'll come from the club football world and the international football world. Like, if the contractual obligations are definitely up at the end of March, that's more likely to be club football than it is international, is it not? Because a lot of people are a lot of people in international football not contracted around the cadence of major tournaments. So I mean, Gus Poyet is
the playoffs coming up.
I don't think it'll be Gus Poyet, but you know, playoffs. But if Gus Poyet wins those playoffs at Greece, or whoever, you know, wins a playoff and qualifies, they'll be there for
whose club football season ends in March?
Well, no, this is an element to it whereby it could be someone involved in a club and working at a level where possibly they could be released sooner.
Look at you trying not to say too much.
No, it's just at the moment it's just a working theory that isn't working really well for me at the moment.
We did look like, I mean, the season...
Who do you want? Go on, yeah, go on.
Sorry, the seasons in like Saudi Arabia and Belgium, you know, their regular seasons pretty much finish at the end of March. I think Israel might be the same, interestingly. But they go into playoffs, you know, the playoffs that take you up until May. So, again, I'm a little bit confused as to how anyone could give a firm deadline there. So, it's very unusual, you know. I mean, if it was... if it was announced in early June when a contract up at the end of May, you couldn't rule anyone out. but it's such a strange timeline that I think you can't go south.
I was going to say you said Israel, which is but let's be honest, have we even ever mentioned Robbie Keane's name?
No, I don't think we've discussed it. No one's really discussed
it. And the reason being, exactly, partly is just because, like, the how things kind of ended with him with the FAI, some of whom would be making the decision, some of whom wouldn't be. Like, I don't think he, like, you know what I mean? Like, but, and obviously there's a situation of the fact that he's still involved with a club in Israel and everything that's happening there, and the moral side of things. But let's be honest, we've all gotten used to having to kind of park kind of our kind of morality a little bit when assessing what happens in football, because the two of them don't always go hand in hand. Do you know what I mean? But, like, it is a name that hasn't been mentioned, but if you look at the job that maybe he is doing, if you were to look at it coldly, which is what I suppose you have to do, like, he has been pretty impressive so far, no, in his first managerial job. And But I don't know.
Can't say I've been keeping a massive eye on it over there. Are they going well there?
But just doing well. They seem to be doing well in Europe as well, don't they? Like, I don't know. It's just... I don't know.
Results have been good, like. I mean, I think he started really well there. The only thing is, like, it's such a small sample size to be pointing the Ireland manager off. But then again, you look at the other names mentioned. He actually, like, he has more managerial experience than Anthony Barry, for instance, you know? And, you know, who seems to be the people's choice as a shoe-in for the job. So if that's the kind of level of experience that the FAR are looking at, then I wouldn't think that would necessarily preclude Robbie. And now I'm now going into the realm of complete and total speculation. But the fact that I assumed that John O'Shea had proposed that Brian Kirby brought in, so I actually thought then, oh, then Brian will probably not stick around then beyond the first two matches, but are these two matches. But if he was the FAI's choice, that does open the door that, you know, Brian is very much on the agenda for staying on more permanently. And that might change the dynamics of, you know, he inspires a lot of love and loyalty, rightly, among those who played under him. And you wonder, is he there, like, he could almost, you know, if you're Robbie Keane, you might be more interested in working for the FAI if you have Brian as an almost go-between between you and the executives who, you know, you have had you may have had issues with in the past. But that's all complete speculation on my part.
Well, listen, that's what we're here for, speculation, yeah. And ruling people out, just as Shane likes. So who do you actually want to be the manager at this point? All the different names.
What different? But there are no realistic names. There is literally no realistic names at the moment. Who am I choosing between? Tell me the people I'm choosing between. I'll tell you who I'd most like.
I'm going back to bat for Anthony Hudson, my boy.
What is he contractually tied in until the end of March with?
Nothing, unfortunately. I thought he was at a club in Qatar, but he's left it. He's a free agent, so sadly, I think we can...
I'm guessing as well that and obviously the story, we had the story that maybe about Billich, that maybe Billich wasn't a contender and that there'd be no contact, and that is my understanding of it. But obviously, like, it has come from somewhere. It was in the report in the Irish Mirror on Saturday night, and perhaps that's part of the reason is because what you were saying there with how their season ties in. You also forget, like, he's been around for so long. For some reason, I thought he was older than what he actually is. What was your instinct when you heard that about Billich, Shane?
Yeah.
In terms of your first point.
It definitely wasn't one where I was going, oh Jesus, no, which has been my reaction to some of the names that have been thrown out. I would definitely see merit to Slaven Billich. Yeah, I think he's look, like most managers, you can point to the two or three gigs probably that haven't gone very well for him, but I think at most of the places he's been, he's done reasonably well. Met him in a, what's the name of the big burger joint? Fancier than Eddie, Hollywood. What's that one? No.
Planet Hollywood.
We met him in Planet Hollywood. We were over for a Spurs match last year, and he was, who was he managing last year? What? Was he?
Watford.
At the time? Yeah, we met him in Planet Hollywood, so we did. My young lad wanted to go up and say hello. But he wouldn't be a bad contender.
And did he, and sorry to preempt a potential story on our side, did he express an interest to you in the Ireland job?
Unfortunately, I lacked the foresight to ask him such a question. Silly me.
I'm gonna 11 reef you here now, which are a 10 reef version of that. I remember Euro 2012. In Budapest, Ireland were playing Hungary in a friendly before the Euros. There was like an electrical storm in Budapest, and the match was like abandoned. Well, it wasn't abandoned, it was just delayed or whatever. But he was there, and in fairness, a lot of us crowded around him, asked him for a chat, and he lit up a smoke and held court and was very sound.
Good enough reason for him to get the Irish job, in my opinion. As good as anyone else.
But hopefully by next week, this time next week, we still won't know. Hopefully the work that I'll be doing over the next few days, I can at least rule somebody out for you, Shane. That's all I want to do now at this point.
It would just be hilarious if they actually managed to get all the way to the day of the announcement without any of you knowing anything, and everybody is just there holding their breath to see who walks out through the curtain. That would be impressive.
probably, I would like it if he did it kind of like Undertaker style and he appeared from like a coffin on the side of like the thing, just like the music.
But if they do it that way, it'll be Mick McCarthy.
Where's Mick actually? Could you know what? I wonder. I know we're chatting here, but like we're assuming it's someone who maybe is still involved in football, as in a manager or coach. If it's contractually, is there somebody contractually obliged to be working for Sky Sports just for the next month on a rolling month-to-month contract?
Very possible. Yeah.
Then it's like that, when you're thinking Roy.
Listen, we can't have a podcast.
Michael Richards. Gary Neville fancy another cracker.
Have to say, I was watching Thierry Henry on Monday Night Football last night. Oh, I don't know. I'm coming around to the idea.
Thierry Henry managing the world?
I mean, it's unlikely.
That's a slap in the face with that hand as well. That's a slap in the face.
It's unlikely in a number of levels, and his assistant manager Gael Clichy was probably more impressive on the same show a couple of weeks ago. But I'm always so impressed by whoever does that show. I mean, Gary O'Neill. I die for Gary O'Neill. Imagine if we got Gary O'Neill now, like.
Fairness, he's doing a great job now, isn't he?
Yeah.
Alright, well, I think actually Gary O'Neill is the perfect way to end this segment of the podcast. Right? So let's just move on. So turning to domestic matters, I was at Tallaght Stadium last night. Great game. Don't know if you've watched it on Virgin. 2-2, Derry City and Shamrock Rovers, Marcus Pume equalising in the I think it was a third minute of injury time. I don't know, like I kind of gone through some of the results even during the game, and there was people were just going, what is going on in Ardiel? So obviously Sligo absolutely battered Dundalk. At what point do we say poor Dundalk? Like is that too patronising, Chen? But 5-0.
It is at the moment, yeah, okay. Anyway, but what a result. My God, I couldn't have. There's been, like, we've only had, three rounds of fixtures or whatever it is, 3.5, and, like, twice now I find myself saying, there's no way on earth I would have got close to predicting the outcomes of the previous night's games. The results have been absolutely all over the place at the moment.
I was, I think on this podcast a couple of weeks ago, I said I was buying stocks in Dundalk after their draw against Shamrock Rovers. I'm selling them now.
Penniless.
I think they're down to junk status.
They're the crypto team of the League of Ireland.
Oh, like, my God. I mean, what a disastrous performance. Like, and obviously a horrifying night for the goalkeeper George Shelby. I genuinely can't think of a goalkeeper who's been hooked at half time because of their performance before. I don't think I've ever seen it.
No, me either. And I mean, just the dynamic of having to do that and the dynamic of the conversation that leads to that happening, like, it's just, oh, it's a horrible situation for, obviously it's a horrible situation for the player, but even I'm just putting myself in Stevie's shoes there as well, like, you know, having to make that call, the conversation I've had about an outfield player, but you just multiply it by 10 when it comes to the actual goalkeeper is, you know, all things being equal here, the correct decision is to hook this player at half time. But are you actually doing more harm than good? Are you making absolute bits of his confidence and essentially confining him to the bin forever? Or do you just suck it up and leave him there? You know, with an outfield player, you'd say leave him there for 10 minutes into the second half so it doesn't look as bad and hook him then. That's not really an option with a keeper. So therefore, Stevie probably felt that his hand was kind of forced in that sense. But it was an absolutely horrible one, that's for sure.
It probably was the kindest way to do it. And you would say, from a perspective now, Shane, as a manager and a coach and dealing with it, is it's how he kind of... Because I saw James Rogers, one of the local journalists there, tweeting after him saying that the players were kept in after the game and stuff. So obviously, like, there was conversations being had there, whether or not that was O'Donnell purely going through them or going through this, what happened, or players even doing it. But it is now, in the instance of as a manager, how you deal with that. With the goalkeeper, essentially, do you know what I mean? Because he's still a young enough lad. Maybe it was the kindest way of doing it at halftime and trying to explain it, but we say it all the time, it's now going to be a combination of him having that mental strength to get over it and try and get back on an even keel somewhat, and O'Donnell, if he even wants to, giving him the platform to try and rebuild that confidence.
Yeah, and that's it. Like you say, at halftime, it's either of two approaches here. It's either, listen, kid, I'm taking you out of here just for your own benefit, for your own good. If I leave you out there in the, you know, the way you're probably feeling at the moment, things could only go from bad to worse. Or you take the complete opposite approach, which is, you know, it would be very, very easy for me to hook you here, but I'm going to show real, real faith in you. I'm going to leave you out there, and I want you to just try and prove me right and show real mental strength by going out there and getting the second half clean sheet kind of a thing. You know, there's either of the two approaches. Obviously, Stevie's decided that the only route to go was the former. Like you say, it's more interesting now to see what happens long term. Like, it would be very surprising to see him start and goal this weekend, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I can't. I'd be very surprised. It's also, as well, think about it. Like, sorry, but even like you think about it, like, they did bring in two goalkeepers during the window. So he's probably thinking as well, well, this happened.
I have to I'll be honest with you, I've never liked that route. I thought it was mad when I saw Arteta doing it with Arsenal this year. For me, the route I have always gone there is the one position where I just want, he is my first choice. He is my second choice, is in goal. And the goalkeeper knows that barring a run of three or four horrendous appearances in a row, he is my starting goalkeeper. And the number two accepts that bar a run of horrendous performances or an injury, I am going to be this guy's backup for the year. I just think that gives, you know, I think that gives the number one clear confidence that they know where they're at all the time. Whereas when there's that indecision, am I his first choice, am I not? Am I one bad performance away from being dropped? That I never liked that dynamic, you know, but it's, you know, it's horses for courses there.
Yeah, well, he's one bad half away from being dropped. We now know this. Like, in fairness, you had to feel sorry for him. It was a brutal night for him. Like, the first goal, the second goal, he's absolutely carried that into the net. It was right at him. The third goal is the most bizarre, where Andy Boyle wins the challenge in the box. And he's waiting for the ball to roll back to the goalkeeper. Now, look, maybe he and the rest of the defence can be a bit more alert, but keeper's not in the right starting position, and then he rushes out, and the Sligo player just tucks it beyond him. It was horrible. If there's any consolation for Dundalk fans, I don't think Andy Boyle can play as poorly again. He's a lot better than, you know, the highlights at least suggested last night, but I think the Dundalk do have a tendency of just being done too easily by bowling behind over the top, you know, and that was Sligo's route to goal so often. But that's frightening stuff, you know. And, you know, are they, like, is this going to be a season where they battle relegation? Like, it could be, because the standard at the bottom is so much higher this season than it has been for years previously. Like, Galway had a lot of the game against Shelburne. I don't know if they created a huge amount, but, you know, that they'll just be so rugged and difficult to beat that they'll not get hammered very often, and they'll just pick up points here and there. Waterford looked fantastic. Like, Ammon's made a massive impact, and a super goal as well by Asamoah, who looks a really good find for them. And we've talked about some of the quality of the recruitment, and they're so well placed then in summer with the Fleetwood link up to strengthen wherever they need to strengthen. So you're like, these are nervous times for like established Premier sides who will be looking over their shoulders and thinking like, and then worst of all for Dundalk is the Drogheda up the road get 3 points against Bowes. You know, it's just proof yet again that they have intentions of going absolutely nowhere.
And what you've just said there, they also have that benefit of all going well, that they can maybe strengthen as well with the links that they have to Walsall.
Yeah, and I think,
and the owners, the fact that they now own as well Weavers Park, sorry Shane, the fact that in terms of news this week, the fact that they now own their own ground and look as if they're going to be building, it does look as if the owners there are coming in. Like, that's a pretty significant, not gesture, pretty significant statement to make in terms of actually purchasing the ground and then saying we want to build somewhere else. Do you know what I mean? Like, that would suggest they're at least in this and have a plan.
Yeah,
here.
You would think so. You would think so. And just on Gav's point, I think, you know, another defeat there last night for them, and I think you would then have started to reach the stage of it's, you know, Drogheda plus who. People would be kind of coming to that conclusion straight away. But to, you know, to win that a game and win a game against a team that should be finishing in the top half, you know, immediately just shows that exactly as Gav said, like, Kev is going to do absolutely everything he possibly can here to try and keep them out of it again. Like, you're looking at, like, are Dundalk second favourites to finish bottom? Like, Drogheda are probably still favourites to finish bottom, but you've just described it. Like Galway have shown enough about them. Waterford have shown enough about them. That was just sensational from Sligo last night.
They have Max Matif until the summer at least. So like, if he repeats what he did last year in terms of banging in the goals, he could help them get to a pretty safe enough position, because that's what kept them up last year.
Yeah, I'm actually asking a question and then typing to see the answer as I say at the same time. why ask, are they second favourites, when you can actually check, are they second favourites? They are. So at the moment, I'm just looking here on one betting site. Drogheda are favourites to finish bottom, and Dundalk are currently second favourites to finish bottom. And then they've got three in a row after that, all at the same odds. Waterford, Galway and Sligo, all at the same odds.
Mm. Well, Dundalk have Pats on Friday. We're talking about goalkeepers. Like, I was at, again, like Marcelo Pitaluga didn't cover himself in glory, it seems, last night in that game. But even, like, Brian Maher probably could have done better. I was at Tallaght Stadium for Darragh Bourne's shot, like that kind of shot screamed under. I kind of thought maybe, you know what, I don't think he was expecting Bourne to take the shot on early on his right foot, maybe take a touch and take it with his left, and possibly hadn't set himself. That's, if you're being kind, that's what you would probably say for that. But like, I don't know, it's this teams, we said it, like, you probably expected more from Pats as well. Obviously, definitely have, like, I know they've won one game, but like, the nature of the overhaul, things haven't gelled or haven't kind of gotten smoothed there, and you kind of wonder, has some of their shakiness come from a little bit of the goalkeeper? You don't want to point fingers. He's clearly got a certain level element and a level of calibre coming from Liverpool, but it's sometimes fourth team football, no matter where it is, can take a bit of time to adapt, and if you don't do it quickly, you're going to struggle.
Pats have relied on the loan market at goalkeeper for the last few seasons.
Yeah.
All have had, you know, I mean, we remember Anang making a drop and a clanger in the President's Cup when in his first game, and all had shaky starts, but all kind of began to find their feet, if I'm remembering rightly, after a few games. And the kindest way of saying it is that Pitaluga is taking a little bit longer to find his feet. I just saw the highlights from the Waterford game, but bloody hell did he struggle. Like, was pretty weak on the second goal, and was absolutely blessed not to concede. Was it Amund who charged down his attempted clearance in the first half? So, like, blessed in that regard. And I thought he'd be better with his feet, to be honest, in his distribution. I thought that would be the one thing that, you know, you can kind of incubate that in an academy, especially one as good as Liverpool's. So I'm kind of surprised at how poor his distribution is. I guess he's not used to playing on pitches these bad. You know, not to be too unfair to some of the places he has played, but he played at the Brandywell on Friday, one of the worst surfaces in the country. So maybe that doesn't help him either. But you would imagine that he's enough about him to kind of steady himself. But, you know, you do wonder, you know, like obviously Stephen O'Donnell moved very quickly at half time to get rid of to withdraw his underperforming goalkeeper. You wonder if Pat's patience will be tested in.
Just while, I know Shane was saying there about typing while talking, the Ireland's women's team group has just been confirmed for Euro 2025. Have you seen
Go
it?
On.
No, I've not breaking seen the news. You're going to break the news to me.
Fucking hell.
Sorry,
France.
Actually, wait, can you rule the teams out first?
Sorry, so Shane, Ireland will not play the Netherlands, they will not play Italy. Jesus, France, England, and Sweden.
What?
How low can a low block go? My God.
That is dreadful.
Yeah.
Jesus.
That is pretty much as hard as...
And
that
is there,
pretty much
like,
hard,
is there
as hard
who,
a draw as we
who's
could have
in
got.
What seedings here? Like, how the hell does that work out? They all sound like teams who should
so,
be in first seed.
So, France... Yeah, well, see, England didn't have a great Nations League, I think. Didn't they lost a few games? Didn't they struggle as well? And they didn't qualify for the Olympics on the back of something. I have to... This is thankfully why Emma Duffy isn't on this podcast today as well. And obviously he's going to be doing something with us as well, either later this week or after the first round of games in the Women's Women's League of Ireland, which starts on Friday. But just going through this. But like, yeah, it seems as if France were top seeds, England second seeds, and Sweden third seeds. Like, my God. That's it. That is
brutal. Like, we have, as far as I'm pretty certain, we have a backup playoff. Like, we are guaranteed a playoff that the third and fourth place teams in League A, which, you know, based off that draw, would likely be us. We'll play the five group winners and the three best ranked runners up in League C over two legs in October, and then go on to a second round of playoffs to likely face a League B team to get to it. But I would have, like, that draw would certainly forestall automatic qualification. Emma also did a kind of a best case and worst case scenario for the draw that we ran on Sunday, and I'm just looking at it here. Worst possible draw, she had Spain rather than France, in fairness, from the top pot.
No, they are the world champions. Yeah.
And then had England from the second pot and had Sweden from the third. So yeah.
Look, on
France rather than
Spain? On the upside with my spectator hat on, there are going to be some cracking games at home, aren't they? They're brilliant ones. My niece is getting to the age now where I've started to bring her to the Irish women's games, and there'll be some crackers to head to.
Also, I was going to say, and part of it is like in terms of the exposure with games that happen, say, from BBC and also from Sky, but even during the World Cup, like, Lauren Hemp is sensational. Like, genuinely sensational. And, like, if you're looking at it from the point of view of actual players, like, there's some actual genuine, even in that England team, there's actually some genuine stars of the women's game who you're going to actually get a chance to see up close and see Katie McCabe absolutely smash it.
Including plenty of her own Arsenal teammates, I'm sure.
They have, I mean, it's a tough draw, but, like, sorry, we'll move back to Lee Vernon in a second, but, they could definitely get good crowds at the Aviva if they want to play these games there, for definitely England.
Oh, yeah. France,
and possibly Sweden as well. Like, I mean, they could be interesting, but I hope that they do target the Aviva for those games and get good crowds at them.
That was obviously a brief interview, just because as soon as I saw the draw, part of me was thinking, like what you were saying, Gav, was this like what the, this could be the worst possible scenario for Ireland, and then it dawned on me, no, this was the actual draw for Ireland. So for all the talk of the men's team getting a rough go of it by having like Greece and whoever in the group, like, Jesus, poor, I got, it sounds patronising, but like Eileen Gleeson is gonna have her work cut out.
Yeah, sorry, just very lastly on this, I just see a tweet from John Fallon. To put the draw in context, France, England and Sweden are ranked 3, 4 and 5 in the world rankings. Spain and USA are the only teams ahead. Christ alive.
So the 3, 4, would you know who's top dogs in the League of Ireland? Damien Duff Shelbourne.
Listen. It's an absolutely outstanding start. It really, really is. And you would be saying, for a team that you thought would be there or thereabouts trying to get a European spot again, now you'd be thinking that's the bare minimum for them. They're just so well defensively organised, aren't they? Like, if they get 1-0 up, what the hell do you do against them? You kind of have to. Your hope is to try and score first, really, isn't it?
That's what John Caulfield said, wasn't it? Yeah. To get ahead. And do you know what as well? Like, you'd wonder, and for both on this, like, you'd wonder then, like, and even for you, that gets into other teams' heads as well. Like, last season, Derry had the best defence in the league. Like, they had, I think they conceded 24 goals. I think Shells was 27. I have to double check that. If you can actually, one of you double check that for me, that'd be great. Thank you very much. But like, that gets in teams' head, doesn't it? Players where you're like, and then would that tend to make you play a bit different against a certain team? Again, say a Shells where you say, well, you know what, try and attack them a bit, leave you exposed, and then they have the players like a Jarvis or whatever to be able to punish it if you come out of your shape a bit more, because like if you, it's like, not only that whole thing of, you know, beating in the tunnel, I don't think they're quite at that level. Well, they're not at that level, but in the game of it, as you say, when they, if they go ahead, teams could just even lose more belief that they can actually get at, and once that happens, you know, there's no doubt about that, surely.
Yeah, no, I agree. You do start to build that, and it works both sides. So it gives the Shells players confidence. I would say Shelburne at the moment are like, you know, 1-0 up. We're 1-0 up with a half an hour to go. Bring it on. Do you know, like, relishing it. Do you know, whereas other teams are like, oh, you know, we're pinned backs against the wall. We're inevitably going to concede. I'd say Shells are licking their lips between Duffer's kind of mentality of us against the world anyway, and then the fact that they do seem to be able to do this. I'd say they're loving that dynamic, whereas obviously then the flip side appears to works out the team playing against them in that they're thinking, Jesus, these fuckers, they know exactly how to grind this out, kind of a thing. And it then becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy, really, so it does. But look, I would still be very surprised if they finished in the top two, if I'm honest. But you would have to say they're certainly looking good for a third, fourth place spot at absolute minimum now.
Getting Jarvis back is absolutely massive for them, isn't it? Like, I mean, they did. I was worried with Moylan. I always thought Moylan was a good dribbler with the ball. Like, I thought they might lose a bit of ball carrying ability with him, and seemingly with Jarvis coming back to Hull. But however they managed to get him back, it was an absolutely great piece of business, because it was his. Was it in the opening game he forced a goal by with a dribble and shot, and exactly the same last night. Really unfortunate to see the ball bounce off the post, but it came off at such a weird angle that it fell so perfectly for John Martin. So I'm looking for, like, I mean, if Shell's getting into the title race, oh, what a season we'll have ahead, you know. I mean, Stephen Bradley was kind of talking them up last night, I think, David. He was saying we can't look past Shelburne at the no one can look past Shelburne at the moment, obviously given the league table. And I'll be interesting to see if I don't know if any questions, if Damien Duff has been fielding any, do you believe Shells can win the league or are in the title race questions yet? I do wonder how he'll deal with them. I would imagine he'll cast them off and say, we're a little old Shelburne, you know, we can't compete with these millionaires at Shamrock Rovers and Derry City. But they absolutely can. I mean, if Jarvis stays fit, they'll have to find goals from elsewhere, but they've done that so far, I guess. And Paddy Barrett and especially Gavin Molloy at the back are... look really good. And in Conor Kearns they have a goalkeeper who's not always the most popular among travelling supporters, but looks really good. And it's a league, I think, that's pretty light on reliable goalkeepers at the moment.
So that's one title race that Shane Keegan believes Shelburne definitely aren't in, and which will get clipped and sent over to Damien Duff. Thank you very much, Shane, fair play. Does that in his infancy. But another one, the Premier League, like we said, obviously, everyone batters Sheffield United at the moment, but like Arsenal on the back of obviously City, pretty routine win in the end against United in the Manchester Derby, and then obviously as well Liverpool getting the help of the referee to score so late as well, with how things went. It's shaping up well.
Yeah. Look,
Shane,
I probably did think. I think at the start of the season, I would have probably felt that it would have been starting to reach foregone conclusion stage by this point in the season, and it's absolutely anything but. I'm not rattled enough to veer away from me still believing that City will get there, but I'll tell you what, they're heading into about as important a 7 days as you can possibly get. To be in a three-way title race and face the other two teams that were in that three-way title race with you back-to-back is really, really putting it up to them. It's great that we've got to this stage of the season and that they're all still fighting for it. Phil Foden, by the way, oh my God.
Sniper.
I absolutely, I would actually love somebody to now say to Guardiola, Pep, can you tell us where your head was at last year that you kept leaving this fella on the bench? Or what was your, did you believe that he was capable of kicking on to this level, or did you have doubts in him at some stage? Because like it seems to be completely forgotten that like Foden was, talk about, barely used last season. Like
he did have an injury as well. There was part of it with an injury, but I know what you mean, it was that point, but also as well, like maybe Guardiola kind of, again, you know this yourself, you see the perception of him, you see the ability, maybe Guardiola sees him every single day and maybe was thinking, no, he's not ready. And then he had to, at times this year, step up. You look at some of the players who left the club, and then De Bruyne getting injured as well. He was needed to play more games. Like Grealish is kind of out of the team as well. He was needed to play more games, but also took it on and rose to it. And as you said, but in fairness to Guardiola, like he's calling him the best player in the league so far this season. He's obviously won him over in terms of what he's actually achieved. So far. I say what he's achieved, but what he's the challenge that he's kind of risen to, maybe that Guardiola has set for him in terms of understanding what that system is and how he actually wants him to play. I don't know.
Yeah, he seems to be filling the. I mean, one of the big questions we say, but like if you're challenging City, you look for whatever straws you can clutch whatever straws you can clutch. And one of them is, well, Gundogan's gone and he's been such an important player for them, scored so many important goals, and, you know, often wouldn't play a whole lot in the first half of the season. And then when City would put their foot in the gas, Gundogan would be in the team all the time. It does seem that Foden's kind of replacing him. No, it doesn't play strictly similar positions, but, you know, he's now playing, he's spending more parts of more games in central positions, which is where he's by far the most effective. England have had him out in the wing and it never really works for them. I think a big question for Gareth Southgate is how on earth he gets Foden into the team along with all the absurd talent that they have. But and Foden's scoring so many goals now, you know, he's at 17 goals for the season now after the Manchester Derby. Like, I mean, he'll probably get to 25 or so. So yeah, it's a pretty frightening prospect. But I was just, again, to reference Monday Night Football last night, the Opta supercomputer, because these things are never just computers, they're always supercomputers, gave Arsenal a 14% chance of winning the league. They have City as favourites, but Liverpool is, you know, warm second favourites. I don't understand how Arsenal are only at 14%. They're in amazing form. Plus they're not playing
fixtures, yeah.
Maybe, but they still have to. I think things could look very different next Monday morning. Arsenal play first. I think Liverpool have had the benefit of, they've always kind of been playing first on the weekends lately. Even like that Luton game was brought back before the Carabao Cup final. Normally that would be played afterwards. So Liverpool haven't had to deal with the being knocked off the top and being back into the chase for his position, even if it's, you know, with games in hand and so forth. But I think there's a subtle difference to it. But obviously Arsenal play first this weekend and then Liverpool and City play against each other. So Arsenal, if they beat Brentford, which they almost definitely will gain ground on one, if not both, of their challenges. Well,
they'll go top. If Arsenal win on Saturday, they go top. And then if Liverpool, City, obviously Liverpool are home at Anfield on Sunday, if they were to draw, then after that game, Arsenal stay top.
But then Arsenal have to go to City. And sorry, I know I said 7 days. Obviously, there's a gap week in between where the FA Cup games are on, but it is, that, I suppose, the point of City back-to-back. Like, City are... absolutely, if City win both of those games, which is 100% within their capability, you're 1st of April, you're waking up and you're saying, done and dusted, City are going to walk the league from here.
Oh, it's over. I'd be over then, yeah. If City win both those games, it's over. I think they're obviously at home to Arsenal where they've got a really good record. Arsenal have never been playing this well going to City. So I think I actually think both Liverpool and City and Arsenal need to beat City. I think if even a draw, you know, Liverpool are a point ahead of City at the moment and you think, well, if we just draw against them, we'll stay ahead. I don't think that's going to be good enough for them. You know, Liverpool with all these injuries, it's a minor miracle how they've won all the games that they've won since they got beaten by Arsenal, in my opinion. I think they have to beat City this Sunday. And to be honest, if they can't beat City, I know they have, you know, they're kind of ridden rock solid in that Spurs game at the start of the season. But if you can't beat City, I don't think Shane
Sharp can say it here. I don't remember that.
If you can't beat City at home, I don't think you can justifiably claim you deserve to win the league. So Liverpool have to go and do it. They're missing loads of bodies, but what they will have is they'll have an absolutely feral atmosphere and, you know, mad things can happen in that, because one thing that Guardiola, it can get under his skin a bit, is the atmosphere at Anfield.
Well, let's just hope that Brentford beat Arsenal, Liverpool and City lose, Villa beat Spurs and Liverpool in the league. Oh, sorry, Villa win the league.
He let it slip there. He means Liverpool.
Everybody knows the real game Sunday is the battle for the fourth Champions League spot, Villa Spurs anyway, David.
Yeah, in fairness, Villa. I think Villa will do it, won't they?
What a great Sunday lineup. Spurs, Villa and then Liverpool City. That's as good as there's been all year.
Yep.
Oh yeah, Villa Spurs is the 1 o'clock game. I was looking at the fixtures there and I saw West Ham Burnley at 2 o'clock and then Liverpool City at 3:45, and I was thinking, how quickly will Sky even show the last 20 minutes of that West Ham Burnley game, or just cut straight to whatever banter they have planned at the start of the build up? So I'm gonna say I do think Liverpool win the league.
You think so? So what are you calling Sunday's game then?
I think Liverpool will win. I think Liverpool will beat City. City were frustrated for the guts of an hour against a United team that are not good. And they got there in the end, obviously, Foden's magic. But Liverpool are in good form, strong at home, very, very impressive. Can do an awful lot more damage to City than United are capable of with their attacking players, but can also frustrate, I would say, City as well. I think Liverpool will beat City at the weekend. I think it could be a great game. I fancy Liverpool to beat them. And I think when it comes to the crux of it, City obviously will fancy their chances in the Champions League. I could see them obviously that going. Like Liverpool, if it comes to it and they know they're after this weekend, are really in the mix for the Premier League, I wouldn't be surprised if they sack off the Europa League a little bit. Like, I know that'll not go down well for some Liverpool fans who would want to see them in the final in the Aviva. But that's I just think with Liverpool, not just the stuff going on with Klopp, and I know I was joking there about the referee and stuff, that stuff like that is funny, but I just think Liverpool have something between their teeth that like they can go and do it.
I'd be amazed. I'll be honest with you, I'd be absolutely amazed. If this was the two teams full strength going toe to toe, I could just about see where you're coming from. Like, who are Liverpool's top five players? I would argue that they're without four of their top five players. I think Van Dijk is the only one of their top five players who's likely to play this weekend. No Alisson, no Trent, no Salah, no Jota. Fuck me if they pull this one off at some result.
They need Salah back. I think there seems to be optimism that Salah will be back, that he was fairly close. Klopp said before the Forest game, Salah's close, he's not ready for this weekend. They must have him in line for the City game. And I actually wouldn't be surprised. He might even play the Europa League game. He might play half an hour in the Europa League on Thursday just to get a bit of rhythm in his legs. Even like Darwin and Endo and Szoboszlai were all on the bench against Forest. If you don't have City the week after, I think they'll probably start that game, to be honest. I think that Liverpool's injury crisis is absolutely crazy in many ways, but I think part of it is being managed to, they know, like, this City game is the biggest game Klopp has left. Maybe Europa League final, but other than that, he's not in that yet. So given what he's currently got in the calendar, this is it, you know? And that thing that gives me a little bit of confidence that Liverpool might actually do it, it'd be an upset and they're definitely underdogs. But it's just like, you know, they've been at their best under Klopp, and they've basically run like they've got no tomorrow. They're out of tomorrow's. Like, this is it now under Klopp, you know? So that's why I think that maybe they'll just kind of be able to take down this kind of remorseless machine.
Like, Liverpool, City and Arsenal have all won the same amount of games, 19 games. Just saying they're about to be an underdog, right? Possibly, maybe they're obviously because of City, they're going for like 4 in a row. But like, they've lost fewer games, they've scored more goals, they've conceded less, like, they've a point ahead. I know they're saying injuries, but they've built up a fair amount of just confidence and momentum, you know what I mean? And I don't buy into it, like the whole crowd stuff. Like, City have gone there to Anfield before and absolutely smashed Liverpool, so they're capable of that. But they've also gone there and being smashed too, and being really, really poor. I just think how Liverpool are going this year under Klopp, when they do have that kind of bit of momentum in a sense of something about them, it can be impressive. No, don't get me wrong, like, I think it'd be great if Liverpool beat City and then lose the next five games. So that would be fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. And that's what we're all here for, let's be honest. Well, no?
Just you. Just me. You're the only United fan in the room.
I've had a good time. I hope you've had too. Can we rule anybody out for shame before we go? Pep Guardiola will not be the new Ireland manager. Jurgen Klopp and his assistant. Actually, his assistant. What's your man's name?
Pep Linders. I've read his book.
Yeah, is he going to Ajax, is he? I saw something about it. Is he
really?
Into Ajax?
I haven't seen that. I would have thought he'd been making a fair push to try and get the gig in Liverpool himself, to be honest.
Have a good week, people.
Thanks.
Good luck.